I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. The final half hour, Ton, as we wrap up another Saturday of garden chat. I love it.
It's a good thing. It's not fun being back in studio. I need to remember to turn on my mic a little bit, but I've been isolated in my office for the last 15 months. Which has been fine. You know, I'm grateful that KSL had the technology to make it sound like I was here. But just that personal interaction with a co-host is so important.
Makes all the difference, yeah.
Seeing everybody, you know, around the station, it's good to be back.
And we're glad to have you here. Let's help some folks out with some questions. We got a text here. That's a lady asking about, well, I don't know if it's a lady. This could be a gentleman. Pros and cons of a mimosa tree living in American Fork.
They're great trees, and as long as they don't get overwatered, they should do fine. It can take a few years to get them established. Sometimes these are more appropriately called silk tree. Their true mimosas are not cold hardy here. They're more of a warm Mediterranean to tropical tree. And this silk tree, which is a different genus, it's Albizia is the genus, is one that's barely hardy along the Wasatch Front, but it has pink blossoms a lot of the summer. And it looks kind of like mimosa. The flowers look kind of like mimosas related, but it's a different thing. So when you go to the garden center, they'll probably know what you're talking about. But if you ask for silk tree, they will have a better idea.
Okay. So, but that'll do okay in American Fork. Just
it should, with yeah. It. If they're west of the freeway, you know, it may have a slightly reduced chance. But I see them down in Santaquin, which is 5 degrees colder than Orem during the winter, and there are several silk trees that do fine.
Cool. Well, there you go. Hopefully that'll work out for you there in American Fork. All right, let's check in with Lynn, who's calling in from Layton today. And thanks for calling into the show, Lynn.
Yeah, thank you. I've got a question on some gladiolas. First time I planted them, my mom used to plant them all the time, and they did really pretty. I put in about a dozen and a half bulbs, and they're blooming pretty good right now. But my question is, you know, they start dying off on the bottom and then work their way up the stem as they die off. And what I'm wondering is, when that's completely gone, do I cut it off, and will another stem shoot up from that, or is it just a one-time deal?
How much water are the gladiolas getting?
I water them. You know, it gets pretty dry. Maybe two, three times a week. Yeah.
Okay. So I wanted to make sure they weren't being overwatered because that would cause them to go dormant sooner. But they should be green a lot of the summer, and if they start to brown out towards September, October, you know, in late August into September, that's something. If they're starting to brown out now, there could be something else going on.
Okay, yeah. Well, you know, the leaves and everything on there is nice and green.
Oh, good.
But as the plant, the flower, when they shoot up, they're straightened up, and the... The
Yeah, and that's normal. So
yeah, that's...
there's really no way to get them to shoot up another spear of flowers, I guess, for lack of a better term. And
yeah.
So what you just have to wait for the next year. Now, those can be left in the ground, and if you'll put 2 or 3 inches of bark mulch or compost over the top of them that you would rake off in the spring, you actually have a really good chance of just overwintering them right in the ground.
Oh, that was my next question. Do I dig them up or just
to be
leave them in the ground?
Yeah. Very safe, yes, you dig them up, but I see a lot of them overwinter just fine. After they're dormant in October, you just put the 3 inches of bark mulch over the top, and that
seems
to help them out.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was... Hey, why I got you on here, have you ever heard of a tulamine raspberry?
Yeah, I've heard of tulamine.
Tulamine, is that a two-crop or a one-crop?
Well, it's one that isn't completely hardy here, and so you may run into a lot of winter damage. Did you pick it up at a local garden center?
Yeah, I got them down to J&J.
Okay. And so if you have it in a protected spot, it would probably do okay. But it's one that you may, if we get a hard winter, it may not do well the next year. And so it's just a summer ripening variety. So you get most of your berries in July. But tulamine is the main variety, or one of the main varieties, up in the Pacific Northwest, where they're a little bit more moderate in their climate, and they produce really good berries. And so if you can get them to go, tulamines are one of the best berries out there.
Yeah, the berries, man, they come on there. They're just about as big as your thumb, man.
Yeah, they're a great berry.
Okay, well, that's all I had. Appreciate you.
All right, Lynn. Well, thank you
Thanks
for calling.
Much.
Hopefully, hopefully that helps you out. And it's a great time to the berries are coming on, and we're starting to see the, pardon the pun here, fruits of our labors. This is a good time of year, Tom.
It is. The raspberries. And so I usually recommend one called Polka because it's a double cropper and has excellent flavor. But it is really cold hardy. It was developed in Poland. But this tulamine, if you can get it to go, I mean, there's no beating the flavor and the size of that particular raspberry.
I don't grow raspberries, but I think I got the variety that I'm going to try if I ever do.
So, yeah, there's a text in here. Somebody's asking about, and I don't want to bring up the specific brand, but a process called liquid aeration or chemical aeration for lawns.
Mm-hmm.
And it's being sold as a process that kind of the quote-unquote, the air quotes here, opens up the soil to allow water to penetrate more deeply. And a lot of lawn companies are selling it as a replacement for hollow core
mechanical aeration. Yeah.
And we just keep, it keeps popping up and popping up. So what I want to talk just briefly about is that these products have what's called a surfactant that breaks up the surface area of water and allows it to penetrate into the soil, but it's chemical and it breaks down. And so it's something you need to redo. And so it can help a little bit for several weeks, but it's not nearly as good as physical aeration. And so if you wanted to use these liquid aerators as a temporary solution, I think you're going to be better off, though, aerating in the spring and fall and pulling out the plugs. And so I don't want to discourage anybody from maybe having this done, but they need to be aware of the limitations. And I've talked to USU turf scientists, and they have said, no, you know, just to confirm, the hollow core aeration is going to be better than, you know, in any circumstance than these products that open up the soil, the surfactants you're putting down. And so we get asked about this weekly on the text line and emails and things. And like I said, they just have different purposes. It's temporary. And if you're going to pay the money, I would rather see you do physical aeration.
Right. And physical aeration, it's not super difficult to to take care of. You can go down and you can rent an aerator from any of the rental shops that are around and get that done in a matter of, you know, depending on the size of your lawn, but it doesn't take long.
It doesn't. And you know, the scouts do it in the spring. Right. You can get it done for 30 or 40 bucks.
And if you don't want to do that yourself, then, you know, hire the scouts, hire somebody that comes around. There's always people willing to do it for you.
There is. And I find that the dichotomy of somebody railing against Roundup because it causes cancer, you know, quote unquote there. Mm-hmm. And it's just so evil to the environment. And yet they're so willing to use these kinds of products that are still chemicals. They're dumping it on their lawn to open up the soil. And I just, you know, I don't know that people realize, you know, chemicals we use every day. And this is a chemical you're putting on your lawn. Now, I'm not saying it's bad at all. You know, it's something that I might consider doing if I just needed some temporary relief until I could aerate. But the physical aeration is always going to be a better solution.
And you're not involving chemicals.
No. And you're avoiding putting a chemical on the lawn.
Right. So, and is there, we always talk about aerating in the spring or fall. Is there a problem with doing it in the middle of summer?
There's not really. Some golf courses do it monthly on some of their heavily trafficked areas. It's just that the lawn recovers much more quickly in the spring and fall.
Right. Okay. Well, let's take a break here, our final break of the show. We'll come back on the other side of this break. We're going to take Don's call. He's going to ask about his cherry tree, and we'll take some of your texts and more of your calls. There is still time if you call right now to get your question in at KSL Talk. And we'll be back in just a moment on The Greenhouse Show.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
There's desperation and anguish.
More than 80,000 Afghans have since arrived in America. But this story is still unfolding. I'm Andrea Smartin. In my new podcast, Stranger Becomes Neighbor, we'll find out what happens to these new arrivals in our communities. Who would help our newest neighbors? Follow us at KSLpodcast.com, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere else you listen.
Final segment of The Greenhouse Show for this Saturday. Thanks for being here with us. Dave Meekham sitting in for Maria Chaleos, and of course, Don Bettis here to answer your questions. And we promised Don we'd take his call. And Don, you're calling you from Bountiful. How are you today?
I'm very good, and I'm very grateful you could take my call. I almost forgot.
We're happy to help you. What can we do?
Okay, about the 1st of April, I planted a cherry tree, and it's been doing really good. It's about, they told me about 7 years old. It's 6 foot high. But now some of the leaves are starting to yellow in the middle, and a couple of them are getting brown spots.
Well, that could be a lot of different things. I had that panic attack as my mycon. So it could be a lot of different things, unfortunately. Now, are the brown spots, do they have a purplish-red halo around them?
No.
Okay.
Or it's where they're yellowing.
Okay. And is it just the inner canopy itself?
Well, it's only got five limbs on it. Like I said, it's only 6 feet tall.
And what percentage of the leaves are actually turning yellow?
Too much of a percentage, I'm afraid.
So is it like 50%? Half, 50%? Okay. Yeah. So what is the irrigation schedule like on the tree itself?
Well, when I first planted it, I deep watered it for twice a week for about 4 or 5 weeks, and now once a week.
Okay. And how deep is the water going into the soil?
Well, it's going all the way because I put I've got one of those really soft sprayers that you plant your planters with, water your planters with, that's gentle and delicate. And I put it next to it for 20 minutes, 15 minutes.
Okay. It may not be enough. And especially if you're just going by the base of the tree and not under the entire canopy. And so is it irrigating under the entire canopy?
Yes, so the entire canopy is only, maybe 3 feet.
Okay. And if this tree is that old, it should be 15 feet high and wide if it's 6 years old, unless you had a dwarfing rootstock on it.
Well, so that's unfortunate. When I got it, he told me it was a 6 to 7 year tree.
What do you mean by 6 to 7 year tree?
Well, okay. When did you plant the tree, Don?
April.
Yeah, I thought it had been in the ground for 6 to 7 years. So I'm not understanding what you're meaning by a 6 to 7 year tree.
That's what he told me when I purchased the tree from the nursery.
It lasts that long?
No, that it was that old.
Oh, so it's 6 to 7 years old already. And it's yellowing out. So, okay. I'm understanding. I was completely misunderstanding. So as far as the tree grows, it's fairly new. And so you're just watering at the base because it's not a big tree. So, right. And you're doing it 15 minutes once a week.
Yes, sir.
So what I would do is about 3 or 4 days after you're done irrigating is get a small gardening spade out and just go to the side of the tree and see how wet the soil is. And
well,
I would
today.
What so and if it it probably is going to need to be irrigated at least twice a week. Just going off my new trees, mine wouldn't survive on once a week, and I still have a fairly clay soil. And so, but the other thing you need to check is that it's not getting too much, because the symptoms of over and under watering look almost exactly the same.
Yes. Okay. Well, I will go twice a week for some, a month or so, and see how it looks, starts looking.
Yeah, but check your soil first, because you don't want to overwater it and then just kill it. The symptoms with the yellowing leaves could be either, but you really do need to investigate that soil. But under normal circumstances, I would hit it twice a week with irrigation.
Okay, I'll look at it and make an assessment and go from there and keep you informed over the months.
Good luck, Don. Appreciate that. Ton, we have a texter here that I can totally relate to.
Okay.
This texter is desperate for a kill for, it says morning glory, but I'm quite sure we're talking bindweed here.
Yeah.
But it's taking over the roses, strawberries, grass, everything. And I hate bindweed. So I feel for this.
We could spend an entire hour on bindweed and still not cover, you know, short answer right now, if it's in those areas, get it out, you know, keep it pulled out. Once a week, go in there and just by hand pull it out. Now, one thing that he can do in this situation is let it get about 6 inches to maybe a foot long out of the plants and let it run on the ground. And before it goes to flowering, get some Ziploc bags. Put the bindweed inside the Ziploc while it's still connected to the roots and seal it off. And then put a little hole in the bag and just get a little pump sprayer, a gallon or a 2-quart or 1-quart pump sprayer, mix some Roundup into that pump sprayer. And then in the little hole, you just spray right into the bag. And you may have to massage the bindweed a little bit to just make sure that you got spray everywhere in there. So you're not exposing yourself. You're not exposing your garden plants. You don't have any drift because it's the plastic bag. Cover the plastic bag, if it's in the sun, with some old cardboard, an old towel, and just leave it for 24 hours. And that glyphosate in the Roundup will absorb and absorb and absorb into the soil. And that's one way to greatly reduce the amount of bindweed where you're growing crops without exposing the crops to any spray and minimizing exposure to you and your food plants. So that's what I'd recommend in a garden situation.
Yeah, it's and once it gets into rose plants and that kind of thing, it's really hard to manage.
It really is. And it's one of those things that as soon as you see it coming up in the spring, you have to get it out of the roses or else you're had.
You gotta just and really once it gets into the plant, all you're left now is with mechanical control, just reaching in there and pulling that stuff out.
You can pull it to the ground and let it resprout 6 or 9 inches and then do the Ziploc bag technique, but there's nothing you can do when it's growing right amongst the plants.
Yeah, I just gotta pull it out. But good luck with that. The bindweed fight is a war of attrition, and you'll be doing this for a while. All right, one more call here. Dean is calling in from Mill Creek. Dean, you've got a question about a tree.
Yeah, from what I can tell from the internet, it's called Tree of Heaven, although it's not really a Tree of Heaven. I've got it on 3 different properties. And at my house, it's on the west side, so it's providing some good shade, but my neighbor's afraid it's going to get big and mess up his fence line and stuff. It's about 60 feet tall now. I don't know if it's going to get bigger. It does spread out in the lawn, but usually it's a pretty soft wood, and so it kind of mows down. I'm just wondering, once you get a big established tree, if there's anything to do about it. Is cutting it down help? I mean, you got to catch all the sprouts and all those kind of things. Just didn't know if you had any advice about that, what they call Tree of Heaven.
When do we need to be out, Dave?
We've got to the top of the hour, Don.
Okay, good. I just didn't want to cut you short. So in this particular situation,
sounds like a long answer coming.
Do you want to keep the big tree for shade?
Well, I kind of liked it. Like I said, I didn't think it was a problem. I kind of kept it trimmed back so it didn't mess up the roof of the house at all. And it seems like it's just growing up. I don't know how big the trunk gets, and that's the problem. Is the trunk started to get a little bit bigger and move a little bit of a cement border that he has, and it's still, you know, a few feet away from the fence line, yeah. So I didn't think it was going to affect that. But.
Well, it can heave cement. It suckers everywhere. The seeds germinate everywhere, and so the trade-off for the shade is steep as compared to a lot of other trees, and they will come up in neighbors' yards, and so it's one, though, that's also hard to eradicate even after you cut it down. And so if you did want to get rid of it, what you would do this fall or even late summer is do some cut stump or cut trunk treatments, to where you would either drill with like a half inch bent into the trunk on an angle every few inches and then fill those holes going in about an inch deep with concentrated Roundup. You could do that, or you could cut it and then as soon as it's cut down, apply Roundup to the trunk to kill it. But it's going to be a process over several years because the Tree of Heaven is a very determined tree and it has a very extensive root system that will come up everywhere, especially after the main tree is cut down.
Okay, so it actually gets worse outside once you cut the tree down because it's got to grow somewhere, huh?
Yeah, there's a lot of stored energy in the roots and no tree to support. And so that energy goes into what I guess, just lack of a better term, sucker formation. And everywhere you've got roots, there's potential for it to come up.
Okay, that helps a lot. One other quick question, as long as I got you real quick. Last year in my garden, I got great plants, but no fruit. Is that just my soil? I fertilized. I thought I was going to get this great
growth. Did you prune the grapes?
No, these are like just beans and stuff like that. And I've always never had trouble with them, but for some reason, I guess they just didn't get fertilized.
They may have froze. Fertilizer would have little to do with it. I would more suspect that for some reason the buds got froze off.
Hmm. And if I need to get my ground tested just to see what's the nature of my soil, where do I go to do that?
The website usual, just usual.usu.edu. And download the paperwork and you want the routine test. There's instructions on there how to do it.
Thank you so much. That helps so much.
All right. Good luck with all that, Dean. Don, we've got just a minute left here, but one quick thing, going back to the bindweed real quick, we didn't mention quinclorac, which is another option.
It is. It should be sprayed because it's usually bundled with 2,4-D and dicamba in the spring or fall. But on lawns, especially in the fall, quinclorac, it won't totally eliminate bindweed, but is the best product out there we have. And with one application, you'll get a 50 to 70% kill. If you keep after it, you'll never totally get rid of bindweed, but it will greatly reduce in lawn areas, especially, and bare areas where you have it.
It truly is a war of attrition. And there are rumors of other products coming down the line that might even be better. So we'll have to just wait and see if anything best or better than that comes out. But, Ton, it's been great to be with you here again today.
It's been
a while. It's so great to have you back in the studio. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
And we will be back again next week. Well, Maria will be back next week with Ton here on the Greenhouse Show on KSL News Radio. Thanks for joining us today.
2 years ago, Americans watched in horror as a crisis unfolded at the Kabul airport.
She was tear gassed and beaten.
Images of thousands desperate to escape Taliban oppression filled our news feeds. More than 80,000 Afghans made it to America. But the story didn't end there.
It was very cold. There was no power, no heat.
Who would help our newest neighbors? I'm Andrea Smartin. In Stranger Becomes Neighbor, you'll hear the stories of some remarkable refugees who left their homes and their dreams behind, only to start over from zero.
Their only possession was 3 blankets.
And you'll meet Americans who stepped up to help them.
You want me to come when you deliver your baby.
What can one person do in the face of an international disaster decades in the making? That's Stranger Becomes Neighbor. Find us at kslpodcast.com. Follow us on Apple Podcasts or anywhere else you listen.